Hi, I'm Meredith.
And I'm Katie.
And you're listening to I'm Not Scared, You're Scared,
a horror movie podcast.
If you are a fan of the show, please like and follow us on iTunes and Spotify and review us. It'll help spread the word.
Also, you can follow us on Instagram at I'm Not Scared, You're Scared, or email us at I'm Not Scared, You're Scared at gmail.com.
Thanks for joining us. We're here to talk about one of my favorites, Late Night with the Devil.
Released, one of your favorites.
With one of my favorites. Released in 2023. I think it was in the theater also, but a lot of streaming services have it.
Yeah.
So it's widely available. So hopefully everyone has had a chance to watch.
Yeah. I would say that if you haven't seen it yet, then watch it before you listen to this episode. Not that it's like a spoiler, like it's some big twist ending, but I really feel like it's so enjoyable.
Yeah. And also, I can't really do it justice. A lot of the imagery is pretty crazy and really fun.
Mm-hmm.
But before we get into anything.
Yeah, we need to know what's new with Meredith. I gave you a jingle.
Ta-da, ding, ding, ding. So I had conferences, report cards last week. I came home and got under my heated blanket and was like comatose, basically. Yeah. I always kind of get like that during heavy interaction time with staying late, talking to families, all that stuff, just because I'm kind of an introvert, so it drains my
resources.
But I have been trying to read more, and by reading I mean playing audiobooks while I'm doing mundane tasks like laundry and stuff. So Grady Hendrix is a horror author, but they're also funny. They're funny stories. And so this is a new one that just came out called Witchcraft for Wayward Girls. And it's just been released in the past handful of months. And so I'm halfway through it. And then the library took it from me because I got distracted. So
they were like, no, you don't get this anymore.
Yeah. So I put in a request to get it back again. But I like it so far. I want to say it takes place in the 60s. Mm-hmm. And it's a home for girls who are unwed teenage mothers.
Okay.
And they get a book one day when a bookmobile comes and it's a witchcraft book.
Mm-hmm.
And they I can describe one of the parts. I maybe it's a spoiler, but I don't care because it's really delightful. There is a horrible obstetrician kind of guy who works for the clinic, and he's super condescending to the girls.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, you cannot gain more than 17 pounds, and if you gain more than that, I'll put you on diet restriction and all this stuff. And when the girls deign to ask about their bodies or anything about their pregnancy, he's basically like, that's for me to know. You don't need to worry your pretty little head about it. And he's like just a real smarmy douche. So one of the girls has like this uncontrollable, horrible morning sickness, but like all day.
And hyperemesis.
It's sick nonstop. And they kind of transfer that to him.
Nice.
Through a spell. And it's like one of the best scenes. I was like cackling. I was like, oh, that's the best. It's like sweet justice for this piece of shit.
Yeah.
So it's fine. I'm halfway through, and usually with his books, I really enjoy it. There's one I got 2 years ago from my husband's cousin. She randomly sent it to me, and she said, I heard about this on a podcast, and I thought, I think Meredith will like this.
Uh-huh.
And it's called How to Sell a Haunted House. And she was right. I did like it a lot. And my favorite one of his, like his different books that he's written, is My Best Friend's Exorcism. There's a movie, and it's okay. But it takes place in the 80s. There's a lot of callbacks, and it's really fun and pretty scary and suspenseful. So
yeah.
I recommend this author. It's fun if you like scary books, which hopefully people listening do.
Yeah, that would be weird to like scary movies and not like scary books.
I will only read romance.
Romance novels, yes.
Fairy romance.
Fairy romance.
A Court of Thorns are nothing. Thirst trap fairies only. So, anyway, what's new with you?
Well, there was that fun thing that I got to do with you. Was that last week? Yeah, last weekend. Our mutual friend Janelle, I guess, had a gift certificate for a place down in Palo Alto. And I didn't even know places like this existed, but after like going there, yeah, like, it's such a brilliant idea. It was like basically like rent a hot tub experience. And so when she said like, oh, you know, can you go, we have this gift certificate, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, all right, I don't know at all what kind of facility she's describing, but sure, that sounds fun. And it was, yeah, it was like a spa, which again, I'd never been to a spa either until, you know, you and some other ladies, introduced me to Burke Williams. This place, it was really like just, you know, corridors of identical looking doors that led to little individual rooms that had these spas. But it was like, aesthetically, it was so interesting. And I made the joke that it was like Indiana Jones ride, because it was like, it wasn't like, oh, the kind of hot tub you buy and put in your backyard. Like, it was a room that was like fully tiled, and like the hot tub was like built down into the floor, and you like walked down these steps, and it was just like, it was very posh.
It was very much like a very nice elevated bathhouse situation.
Yes, definitely. And so we had like that. Like, it was a private room. There was like, I think she said there was a max of four people that you could reserve for. And so there were four of us. And we just got like an hour to hang out in this like fancy spa and shoot the shit. And we were all working in education. So that was most of the shit we were shooting, was how much that sucks.
You know, it really sticks in my craw.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah.
But and it was not a be fun like yelled girl's out. Day. Mm-hmm. And then we went and grabbed some food and everything. And it was like, you know, it seems like so often, especially like you get to a certain age and making plans is always really difficult. Like people being available at the same time. And then, you know, it just feels like those like little social outings and, you know, they happen very like spontaneously and organically when you're younger. And when you're older, that kind of stops.
Yeah.
But this was like kind of fun because I think it was just like the day before. And she was like, hey, are you free? And I'm like, yeah. And she's like, we're all free. Let's go do this thing. And it's like, what the shit just happened?
We're all going to Palo Alto for a spa experience.
So it was really planned
months ahead.
Yeah. Like, you normally would plan it months ahead. And then when the week before, like, at least half the people would have to cancel.
Yeah. That's kind of just how it is, right? When you have a job and family and all this crap. Yeah. Obligations.
But I also have a bad back, so it was good for that too.
Yeah. It made me feel good. It was fun. And who doesn't like to go to like Gott's Roadside for you had mozzarella sticks.
I had some fierce mozzarella sticks.
Yeah. I had my burger that lasted me like three meals because that's just like a big burger.
Yeah,
that was fun. So I did the synopsis this time, and I guess I'll get started. It's really small print, which I'm really glad I didn't even notice until now. So that's fun. I'll start. So the movie opens with a television showing it's a pseudo history documentary. And we get a view of America in the 1970s. There's satanic panic, war, just a lot of different late night television stuff, and just what a snapshot of what's going on in the world.
Yeah.
The narrator discusses the show Night Owls with host Jack Delroy, played by David Dastmalchian, I want to say. And they discuss the show's history and their ups and their downs. And it's a wildly successful show until it starts to not be. They, you know, there's the quest that Jack has to be number one in late night. And he's going against Johnny Carson, which is, you know, basically impossible to be number one. He has a wife who's an actress named Madeline, who's beautiful. He's part of a secretive woods cult, and that is mentioned as being associated with Jack Delroy. And there's a lot of imagery of him in late night, just in the struggle of him, a cartoon with him in the fight against Johnny Carson. Mm-hmm. And it seems really real.
Yeah.
Like very realistic.
Yeah.
He struggles to be number one, and his wife, Madeline is diagnosed with lung cancer. And it seems very inexplicable because she doesn't even smoke. And it's mentioned that doctors are baffled at this sudden diagnosis.
Yeah.
She appears on his show, and it has some of the highest ratings with Jack sitting next to his very, very ill wife as she kind of like sucks on her oxygen tank and talks about their relationship. And even that still didn't beat out Johnny Carson.
Yeah.
He returns to the show after her death. He's kind of MIA for a while as he deals with his grief. And the ratings for the show have just been plummeting for a while now. And everything is on the line in October sweeps week. And it's kind of presented, what we're about to see is retrieved footage of what happened that night. It's very prominently, it's like widely known, like something crazy happened and now we can see the footage.
Yeah.
And it's unseen and it shocked the nation and we were about to watch it. And it's the title card, Late Night with the Devil, comes onto the screen. So the first, there's kind of a showing of different people who are guests on the show for the night. Christu, Dr. Ross, Mitchell, and Lily. And they're just kind of like going through who's going to be on the show. There's some cheesy antics. And this is all kind of presented in a way like we are viewers of a late night 70s night television late night show.
Well, I think because when they talk about getting the footage, they set it up to that this is the camera footage when they were actually filming what was supposed to go to air. But then they also say that like some behind the scenes. So they acknowledge that like we're also some of the footage is also not like the stuff in between takes or like the stuff during commercial breaks or whatever. And so like really setting it up that all of this is recovered footage, even though it's not going to look like we're not only seeing what was supposed to go on TV.
Right. It's kind of archival as well. Just behind the scenes too. So now we're kind of watching the show and there's some cheesy antics. The band leader Gus wears a devil horns and there's a full audience. A lot of them are wearing Halloween costumes because it's Halloween night. Delroy delivers his monologue. He mentions Jimmy Carter. He mentions their, sweeps week and how he wants a successful show and thanks for watching through the highs and lows and even when he's at his lowest after his wife's death. And it's kind of a little bit of an emotional moment. He's kind of like, you've always stuck with me, so I'm really glad you're watching, and let's get on with the show.
Yeah.
So Christu is the first guest, and he comes out. He's wearing all like kind of gold lamé jacket.
Looks like kind of like a Bollywood costume.
Yes. And Delroy mentioned that it's Halloween. It's time for spirits to come and deal with unfinished business on Halloween. Christu starts receiving signals and says he hears the letter P for Pete or Peter or Peterson. And an audience member says Peterman, and that's what his wife's name is. And Christu says, has she passed on? And the audience member says, well, he ran off with my neighbor 5 years ago. It's very like, just kind of trying to make him seem a little bit silly, I want to say, or delegitimize Christu. Yeah. So Christu's not really excited about that. There's a lot of joking back and forth at the medium's expense.
Mm-hmm.
Christu says the spirits passed, and he approaches two women who are sitting in the audience. He says there's a person who's died, and his mother and sister are in the audience. Christu asks, did he take his own life? And they tell him yes, and he kind of communicates to the two women that he's at peace now. There's a tearful exchange and the audience applauds. So Jack is then about to move on and, I think do a commercial break of some kind. And Christu suddenly starts screaming and he's under distress, saying he's getting a very intense message from something. He says, Minnie, Minnie, is anyone here to receive this message? And no one really fesses up. He says something about an unmarried man that wears a wedding ring.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of sadness. His eyes roll back. It looks like he's like squeezing his head. Like this is really
in pain.
Yeah, yeah. Painful for him. And then suddenly all the lights go out. So then they were kind of everyone's a little bit stunned and they go to a commercial. At this point, we get to see, as Katie mentioned, the behind-the-scenes footage, which is in black and white. The show goes on a break, and Christu is helped into a chair. He asks for water. He seems like he's not really doing very well. The producer comes and is like, hey, how are you doing? And Christu's like, well, actually, he's like, oh, well, I'm glad you're willing to stay, and kind of moves on. He says, you know, he wants him to stay for another part of the show, like at the segment. Christu's looks rough. He's coughing a little bit. And the next guest is a leading voice in skeptics movement. And his name is Carmichael Haigh. He's a magician who's kind of turned skeptic and offers money to kind of anybody who can prove to him otherwise that there's paranormal. Psychic ability. If you can prove it beyond a shadow of a doubt, he'll pay you with a check. So that's kind of his shtick. So he does some fun magic tricks, and Jack mentions his mass hypnosis tricks that he's able to do. There's some different photos of his research kind of shown to the audience of him, you know, disproving paranormal stuff. And he doesn't really believe it. He wants irrefutable proof, and he'll give a check, for $100,000 to anyone who can give him proof of the paranormal. Christu starts coughing a little bit more, and Carmichael tells him, you know, you're a charlatan, basically.
Yeah, this totally is like, calls him out.
This is like the oldest tricks in the book that you're doing. Christu gets pretty, you know, pissed and throws water in Carmichael's face. He starts to storm off, and Delroy admits to Minnie being his wife's nickname, that he's like, this is not really widely known. Minnie is Madeline's nickname that I used for her. Suddenly, Christu's on the ground, and he's, like, very much in distress, and he starts vomiting black stuff at Carmichael. And then his whole face is all, like, red. His neck is all veiny, and he's yelling out, something's not right. Something's not right. So they just cut to another commercial.
As one does.
And Carmichael accuses Jack of telling Christu about his wife to get ratings, and he's like, And this is in the backstage, not in front of the audience. He's like, I know you're in a precarious position with your show.
Right.
And that this is like a horrible, this is low even for you, basically. And then he says, you know, he asks Jack point blank, is your cult, your Woods cult, I can't remember what he refers to it as, but are they helping you out? And then Jack is very like, yeah, I don't know what you're talking about. Kind of, you know, let's move on. So now the show is back on, and Jack mentions that Christu is getting medical help, and Carmichael is still on the stage with Jack, and he believes that Carmichael will end up paying that money at some point in the night. They hear an ambulance. Jack pulls out the book, Conversations with the Devil, and we see a video of footage of a satanic cult and the young followers. It's like a documentary. And there's, you know, it shows the cult leader talking about their beliefs. I forgot the demon's name that they worship.
Yeah, I don't remember.
That they talk about him a lot. And the cult's demise occurs when the leader tells them to burn themselves to death. The only survivor is a young girl who's rescued from the burning home, and her name is Lily. Then we hear audio of the young girl being spoken to in a session by the doctor. And we hear just the noises we hear are alarming, like, hello, Lily, you know, can you tell us, who, what's going on? And I can't remember exactly, but there's demonic voices. There's stuff crashing, and it's pretty alarming audio. Then Dr. Ross, Mitchell, and Lily are invited onto the stage. And Lily is a 13-year-old girl. She's sweet, but a little bit creepy as she, like, stares into the camera. And she's very stiff in her mannerisms a little bit. And she mentions his wife's death, and she's like, you're going to be okay. Your show's going to be fine. You're going to be, you know, really popular. Or, you know, you're going to be wildly successful. So then the doctor asks, later to behind the scenes to speak to Jack, and she tells him, I don't think this is a good idea. This is like another one of a behind the scenes thing, as you know, we're
during a commercial break or something.
Commercial break, yeah. She said, Lily went into a fugue state and she's worried. Lily mentioned Jack in this fugue state and she didn't want to risk it. Jack is really trying hard to convince her to continue his plans. Jack is also then told that Christu is dead and he had had a brain hemorrhage in Sinai Hospital. So, and then Jack's like, don't freaking tell anybody.
Yeah, let's keep that under wraps for the evening.
Yeah, let's not spread that. But so it seems like Jack is very adamant that he doesn't care at what the cost of his show being successful.
Yeah.
That's like what I get from him. And then there's his onstage persona, which is very like, hey, you know, I'm lovable and a jokey kind of guy. I'm a nice guy. So that's, you see who he really is in these behind the scenes parts of the show. So let's see here. He returns to the show stage and the show continues as planned. Jack starts asking Dr. Ross Mitchell about her credentials and she tells Jack, and she also thinks that Lily is infested by a lower level demon. Carmichael just kind of starts talking trash and then the doctor puts him in his place. Mm-hmm. I kind of enjoyed that exchange. Yeah.
It's kind of like one of the Conjuring movies where they're Ed and Lorraine Warren are on a talk show and there's like another guy like calling them out, like calling them, you know, charlatans or whatever. And of course we know in real life that they were, but in the context of the movie world, you know, Ed kind of puts that guy in his place too.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's also a real person that did that. Mm-hmm. You know, I have his name here that I can talk about later because I thought that was kind of fun that it was kind of based in truth.
Mm-hmm.
That he did like talk show circuits and was very much like
trying to refute people.
Yeah. Very invested and offered money, and same shtick as the Carmichael fictional character Carmichael. So Jack talks to Lily and she tells him the thing that lives inside of her. She refers to him as Mr. Wriggles. Not Captain Howdy. Mr. Wriggles, because he kind of like slithers inside of her and wriggles into her. And then suddenly one of the instruments that Gus was using earlier goes haywire and alarms everybody. There's a table that is made of glass and the glass cracks and smashes. And Carmichael, when everyone's kind of like, like that, Carmichael is like, hey, this is just normal feedback. And that caused, you know, when it gets to a certain decibel, it's going to make the glass break.
Yeah. He's scientific explanation for everything,
ready
people.
He's very ready to do refute something they all witness. Lily says, you know, no way, it's Mr. Wriggles. And the doctor is then coerced into conducting a brief demonstration. Lily and the doctor move to another part of the stage and Lily asks for restraints. Or I think the doctor asks for restraints for Lily. That's what I meant to say. The band leader, Gus, asked Jack in the behind the scenes part to, you know, cut it out. And he starts kind of questioning him.
Mm-hmm.
Jack says he's trying to save the show and the staff or all of the, you know, people that work for him. And, you know, you can leave it if things get too crazy. But also Gus says he knows about Christu and the crew is pretty scared. They kind of want to go.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, get over it. It's happening.
Yeah.
Basically, like, stop being a big baby. So then we get to the segment where the doctor speaks to Lily, who's restrained in a chair, looking pretty pleased with the situation. Lily's just like, you know, sitting up like, la, la, la.
Hi, everybody. I'm on TV.
Yeah. And then the doctor asks the audience to stay calm, and she begins. She says, Lily, you know, they kind of start the hypnosis, I want to say. It's kind of like a session where it's a little bit therapeutic, but also hypnosis.
Mm-hmm.
She asks Lily to sleep and relax. And she asks if Lily can hear her, and her head is leaning forward with her hair kind of covering her face. She asks Lily, I'd like to speak to Mr. Wriggles. And Lily starts shaking with a demon voice, and her body is kind of like crackling, which I always love. The chair shakes a little bit. The entity starts asking, you know, why am I here? What's going on? And then he looks at Jack. Or Lily looks at Jack with a demon and says, I know him. I know you from way, way back. We met amongst the trees.
Mm-hmm.
I know you. Then she says that the doctor is another one of Jack's whores, and then the last one is being eaten by the worms. Ugh. It's like, oh my gosh. Okay. Yeah. So it seems like the doctor has lost control of this whole situation kind of immediately.
Very quickly.
And she asks for Lily to return. Lily says a few kind of sing-songy lines about the doctor and Jack banging, and she shouts threats to Jack about being a piece of shit, basically. Yeah.
Which is, it's all very Reagan and The Exorcist, mm-hmm. like just the calling people out, trying to like embarrass them or put their secrets on display.
Yeah.
You know, just because of the information that the demon has access to.
Yeah. Suddenly, Lily has another voice now looking at Jack, saying, how could you do this to me? How could you do this to me? Mm-hmm. And Jack is looking a little bit like white. He's already very pale, mm-hmm. But he's looking a little stricken, concerned. Then her chair is levitated and it crashes back onto the ground. And suddenly Lily is back and sobbing and saying, I'm so sorry I said those things. You know, I'm really sorry. The restraints have to be cut so Lily can be released. And the doctor and Lily return to the stage. Gus tells Carmichael, at this point, I think I want to say that's like kind of backstage. Gus tells Carmichael that Christy is dead because Carmichael is very smug about this whole thing being mm-hmm. a whole load of shit. And he's like, well, Christy's in the, you know, he's gone and he's, you know, probably laughing about this. I can't remember what the conversation was, but he was very shocked that he is not enjoying this.
He wasn't in on this whole mm-hmm. prank or whatever.
And that he's dead.
Yeah.
So that was kind of a revelation to Carmichael, who's been very not believing any of this stuff as it unfolds. Mm-hmm.
Do you think at this point, like, that that Jack actually believed in any of it beforehand? Or can you not really tell, like, if he's just manufacturing it for the purpose of the show, or, like, you know, the whole mini thing? Like, if he didn't actually give Christy that information, like, wouldn't he have been rattled by that?
Yeah.
And
I don't
like,
know. I think. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Because he's like on the show and he's like speaking to the audience, like he's talking about it all like it's very genuine and like we just saw this amazing thing and wow, this is just because he's trying to sell it for the show. Mm-hmm. But like you mentioned, there's that contrast between what he's putting out there on the show and how he's actually behaving behind the scenes. And so I wonder, like, at this point, like where if he's convinced, you know, mm-hmm. or if he's a skeptic as well, because they don't really show it.
Yeah, but it's authentic, like what's authentic reactions from mm-hmm. him versus like, oh shit, what? I want to say when she was yelling about him having a relationship with the doctor, he was shocked.
He wouldn't, like, why would she know that, or why mm-hmm. would she say that?
And he definitely probably wouldn't have ever wanted that, mm-mm. you know, aired on the show,
right?
For sure. So then at this point, it's also revealed that some of the crew has left. They're like, they bounced and they're, you know, and Jack is then told and, you know, and that things are looking up for Jack, though, from the producer saying, like, even though you've made some questionable decisions, we're back in business, baby. Like, at the cost of whatever.
A man's life, no big deal.
You know, this is what we hoped for, mm-hmm. basically. The producer is very like a piece of crap. So then Lily, though, he kind of was spooked because he was like, did you hear her though at the end? She sounded just like Minnie.
Yeah.
And I think that did jar him a lot. So then the last segment is about to start and all the guests are back on stage and Jack apologizes. He asks Lily if, you know, are you okay? And she says she feels fine. But during those kind of sessions, she feels like she's there, but she also isn't. Mm-hmm. And at this point, Carmichael starts questioning the two of them, the doctor and Lily. And the doctor tells him that, you know, I'm Lily's guardian, and she gives Lily compassion and love. Carmichael tells everyone, because basically he thinks the whole thing is a load of shit.
Right.
And Carmichael at this point says, he tells everyone he's going to prove once and for all that what they just saw or experienced is not real. Mm-hmm. So he tells Gus, you know, I'm going to do some hypnosis with you and it's going to make your head spin. So he starts his hypnosis on Gus and asks the audience to watch this his pocket watch as well. It's I forget what it's called, where it's the black and white kind of swirly hypnosis thingy.
Yeah, wheel.
Yeah, the wheel. And it's always, it's usually in the beginning of the Twilight Zone also. So he starts the hypnosis and he asks Gus about his fear of worms. And he tells Gus that, you know, you're in a deep trance. Gus thinks it's a little bit silly. And then suddenly Carmichael snaps his fingers and he seems to be in a trance. He takes off his shirt. He starts pulling worms out of his neck. He's like, oh, I have worms. Oh, something's in my stomach. You know, it keeps wriggling. And he opens his shirt and worms are just like coming out and the audience starts freaking out because they are seeing that as well. Like seeing worms coming out of this guy. And then suddenly Carmichael brings him out of the trance and Jack says that he saw the worms and the audience did too, but Lily thought the whole thing was hilarious.
Yeah, she's just cracking up the whole time.
She didn't see anything. She's like, what is Gus doing? He's acting
he's so silly.
He's being really silly. So Lily then, they suggest watching the playback of the footage, and it's clear that hypnosis happened to everyone in the audience and to all of everyone watching with the exception of Lily. And then, or maybe also a few audience members too. They all also said, I didn't see anything. So then Lily suggests, you know, when Carmichael is basically like, this is unrefutable proof that you were all being manipulated. Lily says, well, why don't we watch the footage of my hypnosis and prove
that
him
it did
wrong.
Happen. Yeah.
Yeah. She says she wants everyone to know the truth. And, the doctor at this point is like, we're going to leave. And she's like, no, we need to make sure everyone knows that this is real. So they start the footage again, and it shows the possession happening. Jack asks for the footage to be slowed down. And then there's one little part of the footage where you see the entity of Jack's dead wife, Minnie, right next to Jack, and Jack looks pretty shocked.
Yeah.
Carmichael tells Jack, I'm not buying the setup, and things were clearly manipulated, and you should be ashamed of yourself, like using the death of your wife to manipulate for views, viewership.
Yeah, for ratings.
So suddenly, Suddenly Lily is hunched over and is awake suddenly and standing with power surging from her. It happens so fast.
Yeah, it does.
Where they're just like talking. Carmichael's like, this is a load of crap. Jack's like, no, it isn't. You know, I don't know what you're talking about. And suddenly Lily's up and there's power surging from her. Her head splits with the power surging from her head. Gus tries to exorcise her, kind of exorcist style, like, the power of Christ compels you. And she just like looks at Gus and snaps his head, his neck. The doctor tries to intervene, and the whole time she always had a necklace with a kind of, I don't know, a symbol on it of some kind. It wasn't real, maybe not religious, but it was definitely cult related. And she's then killed with the necklace. And then Carmichael is also killed too. He's like holding up his check and he's like, it incinerates into nothing. And then so does he. And then Jack runs backstage and Lily's just standing there facing him as he slams the stage door shut. Suddenly you see a technical issues title card. And then suddenly we're back in the show and a stunned Jack is there with Gus and a full audience. Then there's a repeat of the beginning of the show that we watched with the history of the show and how it was like doing really well. And then we see a lot of different Night Owl history segments, different things that have happened in the past. We see this segment with Jack and his wife Madeline, and tears are streaming down his face. Jack is suddenly in another segment with Gus and a contestant from the audience, and he's finally, he's like losing his mind and looking at the audience saying, turn off your TV sets, turn it off, don't watch. And then suddenly we see him signing a contract, and his cult is sort of there with him. And there's the leader of Lily's cult is there as well. And he's just surrounded by all of these different people that we saw in the documentary footage before the show, the movie kind of started, I guess, and it's surrounding him. And we see he drinks from a chalice. Door is open, and we see his wife's room where she is very, very near death and very sick with her oxygen mask on. She tells him, "I was worried that they wouldn't let you see me." She insinuates that he had made an agreement to be the number one show at her expense, like get success at her expense.
Yeah.
And he starts sobbing, and she asks him to do one last thing for her. Use the sacrificial dagger, which made appearances all through the show, on her. So he plunges the dagger into her chest and awakens to find himself having plunged the dagger into Lily. And he starts saying, "Dreamer here, awake. Dreamer here, awake," as he like kind of looks around at the carnage, which is what Carmichael had said to get everybody out of that trance-like state when he was hypnotizing the audience with Gus. And then the show is over.
Mm-hmm.
Did you think it was scary?
I liked it a lot. I don't know that it had the elements that that would like actually scare me to where like when it was over, I'd be like, "Oh, I don't want to turn the lights out." Yeah. But it was like, it was hugely creative and unexpected and fun. I think that the time frame setting is always fun when it's like, oh, it's the 70s, like, it gives you so much to work with in terms of like visuals and style and the look of things. And I did like the similarities, like I pointed out, like the connections, or you know, it reminded you of The Exorcist, it reminded you of these other things, but not in a way that like, oh, they're ripping it off or they're just copying it. It's it was just a really fun idea. I wouldn't say that I thought it was scary. Did you think it was scary?
No, I thought it was just really fun. Like you'd said. And there were like homages to things. But I want to say that it was done pretty authentically in a way that seemed original, with like a 13-year-old girl, like a teenage girl is supposed to be the picture of innocence.
Yeah.
And then, of course, like if you're vulnerable, a demon will manifest inside of you, like in like Reagan, you know, very sweet and, you know, but the little bit off-putting.
Yeah.
You know,
like her behavior. So just a little off of center.
Yeah. And I loved that there was a skeptic there being like, this is a load of bullshit. I thought that was a really fun element that was added to it. And I like the way the show is kind of, you know, unfolded. I like how Jack's onstage persona versus who he really was, was somebody who was not certain of himself, who only wanted success and at any cost, basically. But he was wildly just not sure of himself, I want to say. Yeah. He seemed very like he had his doubts in him, his like ability to be successful, I think.
What was your interpretation of, like, once we get this revelation at the end, because obviously it's like a sequence of like very mismatched and chaotic images and scenes, but it is also supposed to be knitting together information that we had in a way that it seemed like we should understand what happened in the end. Like, did he, so in theory, like, he belonged to, so, and side note, so the Grove that they refer to, that's an actual organization in the San Francisco Bay Area. They're, that's called the Bohemian Club. And they have their outdoor like camp kind of location is up in the North Bay. Like there's actually some signage in Muir Woods, like referring to some like big historical gatherings. And then they have a clubhouse in the city, and it's kind of funny because the Olympic Club, which is the other like kind of widely known country club organization in San Francisco, according to my husband, who he and his family have been Olympic Club members for years, is that like the people who kind of decided the Bohemian Club was a little too freaky and they just wanted to play golf and sit in the sauna, they were like, we're going to go start this other club. And so they went and started the Olympic Club.
We draw the line at satanic
cults and abusing sacrifice children and stuff like that. So I'm trying to like grasp. So he was a member of that group, and they, in theory, he made a deal or a pact or a bargain to mm-hmm. sacrifice his wife mm-hmm. for his success, his professional success. And that's why she developed an inexplicable throat cancer when she wasn't a smoker.
Mm-hmm.
But then the revelation at the end, is that supposed to be that the cult that Lily came from was also a part of or connected to the Grove?
I think that's the insinuation, that they are kind of intertwined a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And so then, like, because when you hear a story like that, you know, in reality or in a horror movie about Lily's cult, and that, like, they all, you know, the leader directed them all to burn themselves, and then one girl survives, you automatically are thinking, like, okay, well, that was the plan all along. Mm-hmm. One person was supposed to survive as the vessel for whatever.
Yeah.
And so that makes perfect sense. But then that demon who supposedly Jack made a deal with for his success, then orchestrated Jack's destruction
mm-hmm.
by contriving this situation that, you know, would have ultimately destroyed his career, and then causing him to kill someone.
Yeah.
Like killing this child.
Mm-hmm.
But also, by Jack killing Lily, hasn't he destroyed the vessel for the demon? Like, I feel like it's not a neat answer to the story, and not that that's a bad thing, because leaving you with questions and kind of confusion adds to, I mean, that was kind of what the whole movie was. There was a lot of like confusion and chaos, and is this happening or is this happening, and who's doing what, but that end, you just kind of left you sitting there being like, what the fuck just happened?
Yeah, I don't know. I think that there's a lot of elements it made me think of.
Mm-hmm.
It made me think of Hereditary
mm-hmm.
with the culmination at the end of like, hey, this is a cult, and it seemed like the demon was very similar to what they were worshiping, which was a very like a showman kind of demon.
Okay.
Because Carmichael mentions like he loves this shit. Like he lives for like the, you know, grandiose, big, huge performances and all eyes on him.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what the fuck are you doing, essentially? And so that kind of felt, I don't know, pretty, excuse me, pretty similar to the end of Hereditary with all the cult members surrounding him
mm-hmm.
and this big revelation. But it also made me think of Rosemary's Baby a lot with her husband guy making this deal, and him initially getting success in the plays, and mm-hmm. then he's nobody in the end.
Yeah,
you know, he didn't become anything.
Yeah.
And like false promises that are made to,
you mean the devil lies?
Yeah.
That is shocking.
I know, it's crazy.
Shocking information.
But like false promises that are made by the cults or made and to get the ball rolling, and basically just manipulating people. Why? I don't know. Maybe just for fun, or maybe to get this demon into people's homes by having it kind of widespread in a late night format for everyone to see.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's interesting. Yeah. Cause I think that's what, you know, having him, maybe the idea was that by the time Jack actually stabbed Lily, like the demon wasn't in her anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like, cause you know, we saw the power leave her as the vessel
mm-hmm.
when shit really started going down.
Yeah.
Because it really, it seems like you made this bargain to try to get what you thought you wanted. And in the end, you lost more than what you thought you were going to lose. Not only did mm-hmm. you lose your wife, which that was the deal, but now you also lost your career and, you know, possibly your freedom if you get convicted of murder.
Yeah, and your humanity. And it's interesting because his show was doing really well
mm-hmm.
and he'd maybe made these deals, and then it started plummeting, and then would impact what he was willing to do and what kind of person he was and what kind of judgment he had, which would allow for these events to unfold
mm-hmm.
on his show for everyone to see. You know, because if he was wildly successful and number one, he wouldn't have gone to these lengths.
You wouldn't have been so desperate. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think also what I loved about this movie was, what kind of man are you? How does this hunger for fame and power, how does that change you and your values and what you're willing to do? And, mm-hmm. you know, damn the your wife, you know, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
And the justification. So I don't know. I love the actor, though. He's mm-hmm. he played it brilliantly. And,
yes.
You know, you feel like I'm like, I believe you. I believe that you're kind of like on the edge, like trying to desperately claw to keep your show because mm-hmm. this is what you wanted. And you already paid the sacrifice, or you thought you did.
Yeah.
By losing your wife.
Mm-hmm.
Willingly.
But you're still not number one.
You're still not.
And that like desperate, like you can be hugely successful, but if you're not number one, it doesn't mm-hmm. mean anything.
Mm-hmm. And he'd already lost his wife.
Right.
And then so even more desperate,
mm-hmm.
you know, because your confidant's gone, I guess, or if he had that, I don't know. It's an interesting kind of perspective on how you will treat people just for a little bit of power, which kind of goes with anybody.
Yeah, that's true. Well, and for a movie like, you know, to involve a demonic possession, but it's not the possession's not really the centerpiece, right? It's not the whole point of the story.
Mm-hmm.
That Jack isn't the possessed individual. He's not the doctor or the priest trying to help the possessed individual. He's kind of like a bystander.
Yeah.
But you know, as they reveal more of the story, you come to wonder, like, is he responsible? Like, is he responsible for this girl's possession? Mm-hmm. You know, and that obviously would rely more on, like, you know, what we might speculate about the cult and about the Grove and everything that preceded these events.
Yeah. And how his relationship with the doctor, you know, it could be like his wife had just not died for that long ago, right? Mm-hmm. Like a year. And then Lily's like, you guys have been hooking up. Like, were they together when his wife was alive?
Or, yeah. You don't know. She was sick. Yeah.
And then what kind of deal was made, mm-hmm. you know, and how did this girl get into this care of this doctor? I do feel, though, like the doctor, sure, she slept with Jack, whatever, and that's nefarious, but mm-hmm. I don't feel like she had a lot of ill intentions.
No, I don't think that she wasn't part of the whole scheme and plot. Like, I feel like she, as a professional, really thought that she was helping, like, she was a doctor that, and she was trying to help this girl deal with, you know, and I don't think that she was a part of any of the naughty stuff.
Yeah. So I feel like she was a pawn, a manipulated pawn, essentially. Yeah. But I did love the Carmichael character. So
he was fun.
He's based on the real person, James Randi. He was a Canadian-American stage magician and author and scientific skeptic who extensively traveled paranormal and pseudoscientific paranormal and pseudoscientific claims. He was the co-founder of Committee of Skeptical Inquiry and the founder of the James Randi Educational Foundation. And he first began his career as a magician under the stage name The Amazing Randi.
Wow, that's creative as hell.
I know. And then later, and this is all from Wikipedia, I didn't come up with any of this, he chose to devote most of his time investigating paranormal, occult, and supernatural claims. He retired from practicing magic at the age of 60 and from his foundation at the age of 87. He was referred to as the debunker, but Randi said he disliked the term's connotations and preferred to describe himself as an investigator. He wrote about paranormal phenomena, skepticism, and the history of magic. He was a frequent guest on The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson, famously exposing fraudulent faith healer Peter Popoff, and was occasionally featured on the television program Penn and Teller Bullshit, which I loved that show. Mm-hmm. It was really good. He would offer prizes of money. You know, if you can disprove, if you can wow me, you'll be paid money.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was fun that he's a real guy that was on Johnny Carson.
Yeah.
And being like, hey, you're full of shit.
Yeah. Well, you wonder if that maybe inspired whoever wrote this screenplay. Like, it came up with the concept for this film mm-hmm. to be like, what if you had like that debunker on and real shit, that was actually real shit for once.
Yeah.
That would be crazy.
Which was such a fun element to add to the movie, which I thought that was pretty fun. So,
well, and it's also like the idea when you have the doctor and Carmichael kind of do the same thing, where the doctor, you know, she's a scientist, but she also subscribes to and believes in like these supernatural things, mm-hmm. and like the challenge of that there are people out there that try to marry these two things that seem inherently in conflict, because mm-hmm. that actually came up oddly enough in a discussion I was having with my class last week during a religion lesson, and it was about, you know, the conflict between creationism and what science has revealed about evolution. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I pointed out that there are people who have like spent their lives and spent their careers trying to find a way to make both things true. Like people desperately, like this whole concept of the God particle was like the basis for Dan Brown's the other book, the not Da Vinci Code, but the other Angels and Demons.
Uh-huh.
The idea that there are people that, you know, believe wholeheartedly in, you know, the biblical representation of the origin of humanity, mm-hmm. but somehow want to, you know, make that align, or like the creation of the universe, want to make that align with what science has proven as humanity has, continued its discoveries. And it's like, you know, it's desperate, mm-hmm. you know, like you want to believe what you want to believe, but you can't deny fact. And so you try to find more information that could make both things be so, mm-hmm. you know, whereas then you have Carmichael on the other side of the spectrum where it's like, no, only one thing is so, like, you know, it's that prove me wrong.
Science.
You know, science is the only thing that's real. So, you know, it's interesting to think about like people where they feel so strongly about those things that like that they're going to dedicate all their energy and all their time, mm-hmm. to, you know, whereas like most people just kind of make a decision for themselves and then go about their business for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, I'm not really worried about it. I'm just going to keep living my life.
Yeah.
It made me think a little bit of when they're discussing her credentials. Mm-hmm. I thought very quickly about Ghostbusters when they're trying to make fun of Bill Murray. And he's like, yes, I am Dr. Venkman. I have a PhD in basically all the stuff she was.
Yeah, all the stuff she was saying.
Yeah. And it was, I'm like,
Like, well, it's kind of like Willem Dafoe's character in Nosferatu, too.
Yeah.
Where, you know, he was a professor, mm-hmm. or something, but then got, like, basically laughed out of his profession.
Yeah.
Because he believed in vampires.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I guess that's kind of a recurring theme when you're dealing with these things that, you know, generally are accepted or not real, mm-hmm. and don't actually exist, you know, like demons and religion, mm-hmm. that, you know, the skeptics on one side and, you know, the believers on the other side, and that conflict there. But usually in a horror movie, and in this one as well, you get to a point in the story where the skeptics have to believe.
Yeah.
Because it's a movie, and so showed us, like, nope, here, this is the proof, it's real, it's happening to you right now. Oh, sorry, you're dead.
Like, instantly, he's like, oh, God, and then finally, dead. Yeah.
He believed for one moment.
He's like, here's my check. He was destroyed. My check was incinerated instantly.
Yeah.
And then his eyes were wide, and he believed, and then he's dead. Yeah. That was wild. I was like, oh my gosh.
And I love joking that, like, you know, everybody's like, oh, the Catholic Church, until you're possessed, then who's the first person you run to is the priest down the street. Mm-hmm. Because obviously that's, you know, it's in fictional scenarios that is the case, because
the power of Christ compels you.
And I think that, you know, Not to get all like dogmatic and everything, but like that's why we had religion in the first place, is because there were so many things we didn't understand.
Yeah.
You know, thousands of years ago, we didn't know jack shit about the world and how things worked and what was real. And so you created religion to explain those things. Mm-hmm. And as the scientific explanations piled up over centuries, then the religious explanations were less and less essential. Mm-hmm. But you can still make a story now out of creating a scenario where, all right, we've exhausted all the scientific explanations and they've all been thrown out. So all you're left with is the religion. Like, that's when we need religion to pop right back in, because we have something we can't explain again.
Yeah. I mean, I have family that are creationists. I don't know. Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm like, what about dinosaur bones? Who put them there?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't know how we continue discourse at this point.
No, my favorite thing is when when my students are always like, so if we're all Adam and Eve, does that mean we're all related?
Yep.
I'm like, I'm going to send you right back across the hall for your social studies lesson on the land bridge connecting Eurasia to North America. And you just pay attention in that class.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I just love this movie so much. It brings a lot of fun. Just like, what ifs, like, what about
this? Oh, yeah,
this?
It's so creative.
And it's very, like, it feels like it could be real. I feel like I'm watching a documentary and found footage. And it's not, like, shaky cam. It's just, like, it's good. It's just really good. And the acting is really fun. It was directed by two Australian brothers that directed it. And I think the rest of the cast, with the exception of David, what's his name? My favorite, but I can't. Dust Malchian. They're all Australian.
Okay.
Like, pretty common names down there, but I don't know. Mm-hmm.
I could not recognizable to us.
Not to us. Not like Lee Winnell. We all know him. But anyway, I don't know.
Thanks for the pick. I really like this one.
It's
a lot.
Fun. I don't have much more aside from, like, the real guy who was the real skeptic. The great Randy or whatever his name is.
Amazing Randy.
The amazing Randy.
Yeah.
I have nothing else really to add. But, you know, I just couldn't say more good things about this. I think this is one I will definitely show Charlotte. Like, I don't think she'll think it's boring, because it's pretty engaging right off the bat. Like, the documentary style. It's pretty fun. But she's never seen The Exorcist.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if a lot of the references will be kind of processed.
She'll just have the reverse experience, where she'll see this and then somewhere down the road she'll see The Exorcist and she'll be like, oh, this is just like Late Night with the Devil.
And I'll be like,
no, flip that.
You need to go back on that.
Yeah, but The Exorcist is a difficult one, because while, like, it's scary, I think for a kid it would be scary, but so much of the content is way too adult.
Wildly problematic. Maybe I'd have to show a one that's edited, kind of.
Yeah, and that's the thing, because it was one of my favorite movies when I was a pretty young child, but that was because all the movies that I watched growing up, not all of them, but most of them, were taped off of TV.
Mm-hmm.
And so the copy of Exorcist that I, you know, watched over and over and over again didn't have her stabbing herself in the crotch with a crucifix.
Yep.
Because that had been edited out for prime time in the 80s.
Really? Who? I didn't need that.
No, not necessary. Really. Not necessary.
But I forgot to mention, just the mention of Satanic Panic and all the ritual and all the, like, there's cults and all this stuff, and which was really kind of in the news and prominent in that era, in the late 70s and early 80s especially.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then there's also the release of The Exorcist, which changed the whole fabric of how we regard anything. Like, it changed the United States and kind of the world. Mm-hmm. Basically, people were just terrified and vomiting in the theater and, like, freaking out and running to their priests, their parish priests, because they were like, I just watched The Exorcist. Am I going to die?
Yeah,
like,
right. How many Hail Marys do I have to see?
Yeah, it, like, invoked such a visceral reaction. It's really fun to go back and watch, like, people being interviewed after they leave the theater, having watched it for the first time back then. And they're like, one person just starts, like, sobbing, like, ah! Like, just, I can't believe I watched that. And the other guy, like, he looks kind of goth. He's like, yeah, that was a good one.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone overall is just freaked out.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's the like a seminal thing like that, and the first time, like, we can't really have an experience like that, because we were born into a setting where horror is so much more, not say commonplace, but, you know, something like that. Like, I've often said, and I think I've said it on episodes before, that the idea of being able to go back and see the first Nightmare on Elm Street or see the first Friday the 13th when you didn't already know these characters because mm-hmm. every little kid knows the hockey mask and knows Freddy Krueger and everything. Chucky, long before they ever see the movies. Mm-hmm. And so there's no recapturing that, like what that experience would have been like in 1984 or whatever, whenever the first Nightmare came out. And they're like, ooh, there's this new scary movie, and going to the theater and seeing it and not already like, oh my having God. This whole character fleshed out in your mind where you just, when does Freddy show up? You didn't know who Freddy was.
No.
Like, he didn't exist before that.
No idea.
You know? And so that would be the same thing about going back and seeing The Exorcist when it was new, that it was just, it would be so, like, I can't imagine anything affecting us to that level just because of the world of film we were born into. Like, the closest mm-hmm. I would say, and Tom teases me about this a lot of times, is the most blown away I've ever been seeing a film was The Matrix when I saw it in the theater. Mm-hmm. I knew nothing about it. I hadn't seen mm-hmm. a single commercial, didn't know what it was about. And a bunch of boys I was hanging out with dragged me to, like, we're going to go see this movie. And they were super pumped to see it. And I think a couple of them maybe had already seen it. And I just like was like, all right. And, you know, like it was when you were kids, you're just like, just walk in, buy a ticket, walk in and watch something. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't like it is now where you like know what's in development 3 years in advance and you're waiting and they've got trailers. Go, you know.
I want to know.
Yeah. You're reading all this shit on the internet. It's like, no, I just walked in, sat down, watched a movie. And I, to this day, remember when it was over and the credits were rolling, just sitting there stunned.
I want to say I had that exact same experience with The Sixth Sense.
Mm, okay.
Because I, M. Night Shyamalan was unknown. Mm-hmm. All I knew was there was Bruce Willis and Haley Joel Osment, the kid from Forrest Gump, was in this. And I went and watched it. I was 13.
Yeah.
And like, are you freaking kidding me?
You're like, what just happened to me?
Uh-huh. And I wanted to watch it again immediately mm-hmm. to see, like, what did I miss? That's yeah. wild. I can't believe I got hoodwinked. Yeah. After all you're the like, Stephen me. King books I've me. Been reading. Me. 13-year-old me.
And then you were like, this will never happen again.
I will always see this a mile away.
Yep. You'll never get me again, Mr. Shyamalan.
Oh, man, I love him, though. But speaking of movies and us and our love of film,
mm-hmm. it's deep and abiding.
Yeah, we are on our way. This will be our next episode, will be our 100th
yeah.
episode.
Who knew?
We started this journey in 2020 during the shutdown.
Yep. Our first episodes were recorded over Zoom.
Yeah, because we want to give each other COVID.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was different times. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. So now we're 100 episodes almost in. So our next episode to celebrate, Katie and I will both bring in our 10 most favorite horror movie moments mm-hmm. or you know, lines or whatever, or yeah. Just parts of film that we just love.
However we define favorite.
Yeah, they yeah. could be a range of different feelings towards these, but I'm excited. I have to start my research for, like, what do I just love? And,
yeah.
and we'll always be like, you gotta watch
yeah.
yada yada. If you like scary, you gotta watch it. I know I always have some sort of suggestion based on, I think it depends who I'm talking to.
Yeah.
Like, some of them might be big babies. And yeah. I'm like, you know, Saw's not for you.
But yeah, and we were texting about this last night, and you said, I wonder if we'll have any of the same ones. And I'm like, I doubt we will.
Probably really not.
Doubt we will. I think it would be kind of fun to maybe we should also each try to guess the other one's top moment.
The top moment? That'd be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'd be funny if it was like, yeah, not even close.
Yeah. No, like I hate that. And I hate you.
I hate everything about what you just said.
Yeah.
And you're stupid. You should leave.
Get out of my
Get
house.
Get out of my house. Yeah, it'll be fun.
Yeah.
And I think over the past 5 years... Has it been 5 years? Yeah, yeah, 5 years.
Yeah.
I think we realize how much we both love and how much we both have no interest in individually as movie watchers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's pretty fun. So because I think that it gets interesting when we disagree wholeheartedly on something.
Yes. Yeah. Although usually, I mean, when that happens, I usually kind of chalk it up to the fact, I mean, and Tom likes to say I have terrible taste in movies and I look at it as I have no taste in movies in a sense that I can enjoy almost anything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've talked about managing expectations and like you don't go into you know, Tommy Boy expecting Schindler's List. Like, it's a, you know, it's about, and so, like, if you manage your expectations, then you can find something worthwhile in almost anything that you watch.
Oh, like redeemable qualities.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But, you know, some other people are more like, you know, my time is more valuable than that. And I guess I just don't find my time very valuable.
Time is finite.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, so. That's true.
And I'm like, Leprechaun, I don't need to watch that. Leprechaun right now.
Yeah. So, but what I was going to say is that anytime we disagree about a movie, when I love it and you hate it, or even if you love it and I'm like, I just don't get it, it's always just because you have a more sophisticated film taste than I do.
I don't think so.
You don't think Jacob's Ladder is too sophisticated for me?
I don't know. I think it's also has to do with me and my weird, uncanny ability to predict stuff.
Yeah.
Which is annoying. Honestly.
You didn't know how Leprechaun was going to end.
A cat scratched.
Like, I didn't
the
bother.
Leprechaun scratched. Like, I guess that's true. I guess that's accurate.
That's because you wouldn't deign to try and predict the outcome.
Like, this is not important.
No.
I don't care about this. I'm allergic to all of this.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, tune in to our next episode. It'll be really fun. I'm excited to share.
For sure.
So until next time, bye.